Welcome to the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Kaylin Svodbik and Mauricio Aristides are co-workers. She's from Miami, is 25 years old. She's a sophomore at New World School of the Arts College. He's 49 years old, born in Chile, grew up all around South America, studied archaeology in Mexico, and came to South Florida in 2005. Both are servers at a restaurant just off Miracle Mile in Coral Gables, and both have years of experience in the food service industry here in South Florida. For Aristides, his experience began in what the industry calls a back-of-the-house job, washing dishes at a restaurant in Miami Beach. He still remembers that job interview not too long after he first came to South Florida.
The first question was, do you speak English? No. You have any experience in restaurant? I go to eat 3 to 4 times a week. But I don't know if that count. So they offered me a dishwasher position. And I realized if I want to grow, I need to learn English. So after like 2 months, I was already kind of speaking and start to cooking. And passed the whole line. After 1 year, I passed the whole line, like salad, fryer, grill, saute, all the positions. But I still want to be a server.
So Aristides did what most people do after an entry-level job, use their experience to get a better job with the possibility of better pay. He wanted a front-of-the-house job, something facing the restaurant customers.
So my next job was already as a server. When I go to apply, they ask me, you have experience as a server? And I didn't lie directly because I say, well, I have a 1 year experience working in restaurant. But obviously back at the house. And my first job was in Key Biscayne. Small restaurant, but really good.
That was about a decade ago. Since then, he's been working regularly in the restaurant business, working at an Italian restaurant, a French restaurant, and a Spanish restaurant. Kaylin Svodbik got her start in the restaurant industry working for what could be considered one of the gold standards of hospitality, Disney, working in a quick service restaurant at the Grand Floridian Resort.
The big white one with the Spanish tiles. And it was fun. It was an internship. I was part of the Disney College program. Mm. And they treated us very well. We worked full time. I was 19 at the time that I did it. And it was a great experience, and they were very true about what they said to us, which was that having Walt Disney World on your resume from here on out will greatly affect your career as you move on.
She credits that first restaurant internship with Disney with helping her find other restaurant jobs, 4 in the years since her experience with Disney. She's a full-time college student now, studying acting, putting in about 20 to 25 hours per week at her restaurant job.
I work weekends specifically. During year-round, because I'm in school year-round. So my next shift will be this Friday night. I'll go in at 5 p.m. and I'll probably leave at around 1 a.m. because I'm usually a closer since I don't work very often.
Kaylin Svodbik and Mauricio Aristides are two of the more than 250,000 people in South Florida working in the food service industry. About 1 in 5 of those are waiters and waitresses. For these front-of-the-house, customer-facing jobs, if they can get tips, their minimum per-hour wage is lower than the non-tipped minimum wage. It's called the tipped credit in Florida. Florida's minimum wage is $8.25 an hour. But for tipped employees like Svodbik and Aristides, the lowest legal hourly wage drops to $5.23 an hour. Both are higher, though, than the federal minimum wages. Now, the restaurant where Svodbik and Aristides work pools tips and shares them with other workers customers may not see, like bartenders and people clearing and setting up tables. They say 30% of their tips are contributed to the pool. After every shift, they get to take home their share of any cash tips and are paid out of their share of credit card tips every week.
So I'll work a Friday night shift. There are going to be about 4 back servers on the floor, or otherwise known as bussers, and there will be 2 food runners and maybe 3 or 4 bartenders and 2 bar backs. So on a Friday night, all of those people are part of my 30% tip out. So there's a much more scientific breakdown as to who gets how much percent, but because there are so many people that make my shift happen, and on a Friday night, as crazy as it is, I can still have a night with no errors. Then I know that work isn't of my own. So it's just that humbling of myself, knowing that, yes, the tips are given to my face, but they're a culmination of the work of all of us. So that's just That's just the way that my restaurant has proven that it works.
According to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, half of the waiters and waitresses working in South Florida made more than $10.14 an hour. Half made less. That was as of a year ago, the last time the government reported such wage data. According to state data, the median wage for restaurant servers is lowest in Miami-Dade, highest in Palm Beach County in South Florida, but the difference is less than a dollar an hour. And regardless of location, the median wage for servers is far below the median wage for all jobs. Both Svadbeck and Aristides say with their tips, they're making well above the median wage for their jobs in South Florida.
Normally, you as a server, I learned that you can live by the day. You need to take or look by the week or the month. Normally, at the end of the week, I will see how many I worked, how much tip I made, and do an average for that. The average that I be working, for example, 38 hours, and I make X amount of money, but I have an average of $22 per hour, that is a really good week. When you do a $25 the hour, that is an amazing week. Some week you will do 18, 14. That is still good if you compare to another jobs.
It is good work. It is a quick buck. I don't feel like I'm treated as a servant by my guests. I feel like I'm actually treated more of an equal. And for that reason, I feel like my work just it's not as difficult. In comparison with any other job that I feel that I'm qualified for at this time, it's the best pay that I could be making, definitely.
Finn Davidson says he's worked in restaurants his entire life, and his family's been involved in the restaurant business. He now works as a server at a steakhouse in Brickell.
Well, I mean, the money can be good and could be bad. At the end of the day, we are all up to the generosity of strangers. And most of the part, I love it because it's a job where how much you put in reflects on how much you're going to get back. If you give that great, amazing service to those guests, they're going to come back, or they're going to give you that money because you earned it, in a sense.
Davidson says his restaurant also pools tips with bartenders and bussers, and it pays out tips after each shift. Then he collects a regular paycheck with his tipped hourly minimum wage, just over $5 an hour. He says he's been working as a server for about a dozen years at a range of restaurants from casual to fine dining, and with no shortage of experience with customer tips.
You know, I remember it very well. I busted my butt. I worked as hard as I can. My sales are something in the thousands, and after tip, I walked home with $20. Reason being is, unfortunately, I had one table. It was a very large table, very demanding. Their bill was about the majority of my check, $700. And they decided that I gave them great service. They felt they needed to tell me, but they didn't want to show it to me. So they decided that leaving me $5 on $700 would feel appropriate for my good job. And that unfortunately really, really ruined the night for me, you know. They were great people, nothing wrong against them, nothing against them at all, just I know a lot of people are really uninformed on how tipping works and how much is really going on behind the scenes.
In March, when Congress passed and President Trump signed into law a new budget for the federal government, included on page 801 of the legislation is a compromise over tipped employees. In 2011, the Obama administration changed the rules and banned restaurants from pooling tips and allowing employees who normally wouldn't get tips a share of the money if they were paid at least the regular minimum wage. Now, several courts ruled this invalid. So in 2017, the Trump administration began work on changes that would have allowed restaurant owners more discretion over paying out tips. The idea attracted tens of thousands of public comments to the Department of Labor, and the department's own economic analysis showed employees could lose billions of dollars in tips. Critics complained that the rule would have allowed restaurants to pay a full minimum wage, collect tips, and then maybe not share all of those tips. Instead, a compromise was struck, allowing tips to be shared, but not with managers and supervisors, and only if all employees get paid at least the regular minimum wage. In Florida, for servers who already get paid the lower tipped minimum wage, the rule does not apply. So, still to come, employee pay and the business of restaurants.
Most tipped employees exceed minimum wage by a considerable amount.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Working for Tips today, I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening. There are about 60,000 jobs in South Florida waiting on tables at restaurants. That's about one out of every 42 jobs in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties, according to state data from 2016. Richard Turner represents those job creators, the restaurant owners, as Senior Vice President of Government Relations for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. It's a position he's held for 15 years. He says the association supports the new federal law governing which restaurant employees can share in customer tips. But when we spoke with him before the law was passed, he didn't think any change would affect many servers in Florida. That's because it affects restaurants only if all workers get paid at least the full minimum wage. In Florida, companies can pay workers less than the state minimum wage if those employees get tipped. This year, that tipped minimum wage is $5.23 an hour, only about two-thirds of the full regular state minimum wage.
There is probably not a waiter in Florida that doesn't make, you know, the difference up in tips per hour. So that's usually not a concern. In fact, most tipped employees make exceed minimum wage by a considerable amount. Just go for a midstream type restaurant, say a steakhouse or something. I can assure you their waiters are making well over $8.25 an hour.
Now, that's for the front-of-the-house jobs, positions that interact with customers. It can be different, though, for other jobs.
Now, if you want to go to the back of the house, you know, that's sort of a different ballgame because it's probably hard to find folks back there that you can only pay $8.25. So, yeah, I'm pretty satisfied a high percentage of those individuals, barring some jobs that are just truly entry-level, will be in excess of the Florida minimum wage.
Wage data from the Bureau of Labor Statistics show the lowest hourly median pay in the food service industry is for fast food workers, counter attendants, and bartenders. Half of those workers in those jobs are making more than $9.30 an hour over the state minimum wage. Half are making less. Again, Richard Turner with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association.
When people talk about minimum wage, well, let me put it to you like this. Our industry does a very poor job of talking about all of the opportunities that our industry have to offer. In my position, I got to tell you, I have met more people who are owners of some of the largest restaurant chains in America that started off as dishwashers. And we forget to tell folks that this is truly one of the last bastions in America where you can start as a dishwasher and end up as an owner of a national chain. And yeah, minimum wage and what are you making, you know, all plays into it, but you usually don't stay at that wage very long. And if we'll just take a segment like waiters, a lot of waiters perfect their art. And when you go in, for example, if you were to go into, say, a high-end restaurant, you'll notice their waiters tend to be polished and very professional. Well, they've spent a lifetime perfecting that art. And I'm here to tell you, there are some waiters in this state, and I won't name the restaurants, that probably make what you and I do. And that's a good thing. And I think we do a poor job of talking about all the wonderful opportunities in our industry. We get so bogged down sometimes with entry level that we forget to tell the other part of the story.
And business is good at South Florida restaurants. The state tax collected from restaurants jumped 10% in January from a year earlier in Broward and Miami-Dade. It was up 8% in Palm Beach County. It dropped 8% in Monroe County, likely a casualty of Hurricane Irma in the Lower Keys especially. So business is good, and the employment rate in Florida is low.
Once you have a market like we're beginning to experience, and if the economy continues on its current trends, you know, as the job rate, you know, goes further and further down and more people are employed, it's going to be extremely tough, and it's going to be more expensive because, you know, an employee is going to be much more able to jump from job to job, hopefully with the pay increase involved. So there's going to be a lot of inner competition there.
Have they had to raise wages?
Oh yeah, yeah. It's a competitive thing. We live in an extremely competitive industry, and I assure you that the guy down the street or the gal down two blocks from wherever my establishment is, starts paying more. You're going to have to, take a look at that.
And are restaurants doing that in Florida, in your experience?
Yeah, well, they'll almost have to in order to maintain a good workforce. And the other thing, too, is that once you get the employee in the door, there's a massive amount of training, and you don't want to lose that. And that's the one thing, and I guess I was alluding to it earlier in our conversation, the opportunity in the restaurant industry, if you're willing to, stick it out and perform, you're going to rise very quickly to the top. And, people sometimes, especially like in quick serve, will sort of, make fun of folks. But you get to become a manager or a regional manager, and you're making a very, very good living. So the opportunity's there. It's really just up to the individual.
Richard Turner with the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association. Still to come, tips, wages, and one locally owned restaurant chain owner.
We feel the effects of the low unemployment. People have more choices in terms of employment. So you've got to pay for performance. And if someone can get more money somewhere else, we will have to keep up with that and raise our wages accordingly.
This is the Sunshine Economy, working for tips. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week. Duffy's Sports Grill started out as Duffy's Draft House in 1985 in Palm Beach County. Today, it has 34 restaurants spread across 11 counties in Florida. It has 3,200 full and part-time workers, and last year it sold $135 million worth of food and drinks. Jason Emmett has been president of the restaurant chain since 2015. His father bought the original Duffy's restaurants in 2001. He died in 2015. I met Emmett on a sunny Friday afternoon in March at the Duffy's in Fort Lauderdale. We sat outside under an umbrella with birds and traffic passing by as we talked about tips, worker pay, and the restaurant business.
For us, tips are a very traditionally modeled thing. A customer leaves a tip for a server. And we have a tip pool that it varies restaurant to restaurant, but generally speaking, 4 to 5% of the server's overall sales will be contributed out of their tips into a tip pool that will be spread between front of the house employees that are not directly tipped. They're called indirectly tipped employees. So think of a host or hostess, a food runner, a busboy, those types of employees.
So those employees, both the waiters, the busboys, the host, the hostess, those would be considered tipped employees under the wage program that Duffy's has?
Yes, exactly. They would be considered tipped employees.
And then the back of the house, the chefs, the cooks, those folks are non-tipped, and then they're at the state minimum or higher.
Exactly.
How does this work for you as an owner? How has this evolved for you as an owner, this relationship, this tip pool relationship?
It really hasn't evolved in a long time. This is the model we've used for as long as I can remember. It's a pretty standard practice within my industry, so far as I understand it. What it does is it incentivizes all the front of the house employees to have a hospitality mindset because their income is sort of in part tied to the customer experience, and it really makes us naturally aligned with our people. It's almost like making them natural salespeople in a sense of what a commission would do, and so that's where it's always worked for us. It seems to work well, and so we've never really had any reason to radically change it.
What do you make and what do you hear back from your employees regarding wages? Unemployment is extremely low here in South Florida. Wage growth in the hospitality industry has been low as well, which has fed to a wide gap that we see, broadly speaking, in the regional economy, but you can also experience it certainly in the restaurant industry.
Absolutely, yeah. No, we've experienced it. We feel the effects of the low unemployment. People have more choices in terms of employment. So it affects us in two ways. One, it does have a upward pressure on wages, right? You've got to pay for performance. And if someone can get more money somewhere else, you know, we will have to keep up with that and raise our wages accordingly. And you know, frankly, we don't have any problem paying for performance. You know, I think we don't have anyone even close to the minimum wage in the back of our house. It's just...
None of your cooks are making that, not even an entry-level line chef.
No one in our restaurants is making that. And that's just the nature of we want to get top quality people, and so you have to pay a bit more to get that. And so and in the front of the house, it's a little different, right? Tips play into their they're more in control of their own salaries. So if a server feels they're not making the tips with us that they could make somewhere else, we may be at risk of losing them. A minimum wage for a server is in the low $5. It's $5 and some change.
And are your folks coming in at that level?
Yes. Yeah, everyone in the front of the house is at that level, other than...
Regardless of experience?
Regardless, correct.
So that's a kind of a flat wage that you pay, and then it's that commission model, so to speak. The harder you work, the more tables you can clear, the better service you can get, hopefully the higher the tip can be.
Exactly, yeah. It's a totally, almost a commission model. There's a few other things that go into it, right? Like there are better sections than others, so a better server might get a better section and be able to make a little bit more money, or maybe the last one in a restaurant, a closer, as they're called, and so that would be someone that might be able to make more
near money. Closing time.
Exactly.
And so as you've seen the wage pressure in the back of the house, but you aren't experiencing any wage pressure in the front of the house because that's essentially the flat tipped credit minimum wage, how is that influencing in the business, the financials of the business? Does it?
I mean, not really, right? Because there is no wage pressure, as you say, in the front of the house. So what it does is it just forces us to be competitive in every other way by providing people a good work environment or things that may be less tangible than the money they're making.
Does Duffy's provide that pre-calculated tip amount on its check, the 18, the 20, the 22%? And if so, tell me about the thinking about adding that to the check and what you've heard back as feedback in terms of wages from the front of the staff that experiences that.
You know, that we do have that, and that was something we put on our checks at the request of our servers. They wanted it there, even though, you know, I think our three levels are 15, 18, and 20 as suggested tips. But you might think that might suppress tips in some cases, but in large cases, I think some people may need a guideline, they may need to understand, especially in places that are maybe more tourist-driven, where people from other countries are not so accustomed to tipping. So that was a request by the servers. They wanted it there, so we put it on there as a suggested tip level. If the concern is back-of-the-house employees not making enough money, I just feel that you just should pay them more, and that's sort of how we've handled it. That you pay for performance, and you gotta, if you have a Top Gun great cook, you've gotta pay him. Otherwise, he's gonna find a job somewhere else.
Speaking with Jason Emmett, president of Duffy's Sports Grill, he says many of his restaurant managers started out as hourly workers. He thinks sales at existing restaurants will grow a little over 2% per restaurant this year. Still to come, we talk with the restaurant owner who wants to get rid of tips altogether.
We just believe that for the professionalization of the industry, tipping is on its last legs.
Welcome back to the Sunshine Economy here on WLRN. Today we're talking about working for tips. I'm Tom Hudson. In the restaurant world, Danny Meyer wants to be a disruptor. He is not a celebrity chef or a CEO of a multinational restaurant chain. His company runs 16 cafes and restaurants, all of them in New York City. And in 2015, he announced his plan to eliminate tipping. The idea of a restaurant paying the full wage of its waitstaff runs against more than a century of practice. The restaurant business model ties a server's pay to their performance. If a customer likes the service, presumably they will tip generously. If not, the server risks a perfunctory tip or none at all. In Florida, a worker who regularly receives a tip can be paid less than the usual minimum wage. The presumption is that tips will make up the difference, and then some. Congress recently passed a new law allowing workers who are paid the regular minimum wage to share in tips, but not restaurant managers or supervisors. Danny Meyer thinks the time has come to do away with the restaurant tip entirely. He's the CEO of Union Square Hospitality Group.
We just believe that for the professionalization of the industry, tipping is on its last legs. It may take another 5 or 10 or 15 years, but it's as a practice in and of itself, does not help people to feel like real service and hospitality professionals.
Do you think what Congress has compromised here on this Department of Labor is another kind of nail in the coffin of tipping toward a hospitality included model that that you have put forth in your establishments?
I'm not sure I'm able to say that. I am very, very happy that with the compromise that management was excluded from being able to put their hand into the tip pool. I would say that if management had an opportunity to take from the tip pool, that would have totally been a nail in the coffin, because it would have suggested to me as a restaurant goer that the tip I'm leaving is not necessarily going to the people who I thought it was going to. And at that point, why wouldn't I just pay a higher price on the menu?
Couldn't the same be said for this compromise that allows tip pooling with the back of the room, the back of the staff, for folks who aren't public facing?
I don't think so. I think it's important for your listeners to understand that in many, certainly not all, but in many, many restaurants, when you leave a tip, that tip is being pooled amongst everybody who is legally eligible to accept a tip. So when you either leave a tip or withhold a tip to your server, it's highly likely that the tip you left or withheld is going to be shared or not shared with every single tipped employee, including every other busboy, every other bartender, every other host, every other server. So it's... I also think it's important to say this, that most people do not leave a different tip, regardless of what type of hospitality or service they receive. If you happen to be a cheap tipper, you're always going to be a cheap tipper. If you happen to be a generous tipper, you're always going to be a generous tipper. And I think that you may think you're leaving a tip just for your server, but you're not. And so I would just say if the restaurant continues to have tipping as a policy, I believe that every employee who had a hand in creating that experience deserves to share in your tip.
In Florida, we have the employer tip credit. So that allows a lower state minimum wage for workers who are eligible for tips. So for servers and bartenders and others, they have a lower state mandated minimum wage than, say, a sous chef or a line cook that would not be eligible for the tips, and thus they have a higher state required minimum wage. With that in mind, the restaurant industry here in Florida doesn't think this Department of Labor regulation, this tip pooling, is going to have really much of an impact. You agree?
Well, I think what's called the tip credit is actually a very, very confusing misnomer, especially for restaurant goers, because I just think people should call it what it is. It's an alternate minimum wage is what it is. So, for example,
And by alternate, we mean lower minimum wage. It's a lower minimum
dramatically,
wage.
Dramatically lower. As a matter of fact, in more states than not, the alternate lower minimum wage is $2.13 an hour. So you could be in a state.
It's about $5.30 or so, and the regular minimum wage is a little bit over $8.
That's right.
An hour.
And so the thinking historically, when tipping was first created in this country, historically was right after slavery was abolished. And the two industries that successfully petitioned the government following the abolition of slavery were the restaurant industry and the Pullman train car industry. And they basically said, listen, if we can get the customer to pay the employees, then the owner of the business should not have to. And it's still not slavery. And so it was $0 an hour for restaurant waiters who were tipped. Same thing for Pullman train car operators, conductors, primarily all African American. And what happened over all these years is that that adjusted minimum wage has gone all the way up from $0 an hour in 1863 all the way up to $2.13 in many states. As you just said, in Florida, it's now over five. There are seven states, if I'm not mistaken, primarily on the West Coast and Northwest, who have eliminated what you are calling a tip credit, what I call an adjusted minimum wage. And so whatever the minimum wage is for all workers in that state is the minimum wage also for waiters and waitresses and bartenders and hosts and hostesses. I think that's, honestly, I think that's how it should be. And I think what we've done by eliminating tipping in our restaurants has been to pay dramatically more than the real minimum wage. Why? Because if we want to have great servers wanting to work in our restaurants, we can't expect them to take home less money than if they could have gotten a great tip job somewhere else. If we want to create a professional outcome where they can get parental leave and matching 401k programs and flex spending and health insurance and all the things we provide, because we want this to be a profession for people, then we cannot even have a conversation that begins with a tip credit or alternative minimum wage. So I think you're going to start to see more and more states increase what had been that alternate minimum wage. And once you get to parity, and once you start to see minimum wage being the same for all workers, whether they're making widgets or whether they're serving food, you're going to start to see less and less tipping. And the reason for that is that there comes a point when the disparity between what cooks make who are not tipped and what servers make who are tipped has grown so wide, 350% since I've become a restaurateur, that something's going to break at some point.
Here in Florida, as I talk to servers and some restaurant owners, generally speaking, they have endorsed the current model. I mean, a couple of restaurant owners have said they see no reason to change the tip credit, the alternative minimum wage, as you call it, because in their estimation, it would mean a potential of lower wages for the front of the house as opposed to the tipped minimum wage plus the tips.
Look, I think that that's a natural reaction, and whenever there's some type of massive economic shift being proposed, the natural reflex for anybody would be to say, uh-oh, what's going to happen next? This is not an economic shift, but I remember in 1990, we eliminated smoking voluntarily from Union Square Cafe, and the industry at large was like, you got to be crazy. How can that be? And then for another 12 years thereafter, there were lots of debates in our state of New York, our city of New York City, about whether that should become a law. And I never got in front of anybody and testified that it should become a law. But I did testify that the minute we eliminated smoking, our business only improved. And I'm bringing that story up, it did become law 12 years after we did it voluntarily. The minute that you have a level playing field where every restaurant is required to do something that theretofore they had feared doing, you start to see people do not stop eating out. They don't stop going to bars. They don't stop enjoying their lives. But if you can increase the professionalism of our industry and increase the amount of money that workers can make, I just think that's the best way to improve the whole economy.
Danny, has your hospitality included model over the past few years affected your sales at all, the revenue line?
Only in that it's higher right now because obviously we had to charge higher prices on the menu because we are not giving you the opportunity to tip 20% after the meal is over with. So yes, our revenues as a business are definitely higher right now. I think the question you might be asking is, have we seen any suffering in terms of how many people we actually serve? And the answer is no. We've been very, very fortunate. And I think a big part of that reason, as a matter of fact, our sales were up. Our we call them transactions, were up for the first quarter of this year, 2018. And we think a big part of the reason is that our turnover rates are lower in the restaurants right now.
I wanted to ask you about retention, but back to just kind of the financial, the spreadsheet questions here. Certainly your revenues have gone up because you've raised prices to get rid of tipping. Have your operating costs, specifically your personnel costs, gone up the same amount?
We're still actually figuring that out. I would be completely off target if I said we are expert at this. We've been doing this now since the end of 2015, adding one additional restaurant about every 3 to 5 months. We still actually have three restaurants to go. So we've now implemented hospitality included in 9 of our businesses. And what we've learned so far is that there are three different constituents that have to feel like they are better off. And it's not easy to balance these three: your own staff, your customers, and your investors. Why is that hard? Well, if you're going to take care of your investors, you would charge, you know, way more money on your menu than we are able to charge when we shift. If you're going to take care of your staff, you would be spending way more money for labor than you used to spend. If you charge enough for all that labor, your guests could go fleeing elsewhere. So the question is, how did we make it all work, and how are we making it all work? The answer is slowly and surely, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And the way we've done it is that it actually costs us more in the early, let's say, 3 to 5 months of implementing hospitality included, than we're actually charging our guests, because we don't want to create sticker shock for people. But what's happened is that since we first implemented at the Modern in 2015, New York City has seen, and New York State has seen, three consecutive raises in the minimum wage. And what that's meant is that all of our competitors have been raising their prices to keep up with that. We've been immune to it because our hourly pay plus the revenue share that we give our staff is way, way higher than minimum wage. But every time they raise their menu prices and you have to tip 20% on top of even higher prices, we are now starting to look like a great deal. And now, finally, we're able to charge what it actually costs us to do all the things we're trying to do for our staff. And consequently, the staff members are happy and our investors are happier.
What have you noticed on employee retention in terms of turnover? And this is important for Florida, obviously, being a hospitality-dominated economy, certainly in South Florida. It is an entry-level job oftentimes for young folks as well as new immigrants. And it is a place where we see significant headcount in terms of local and regional workforces.
Yeah, and in the United States, I believe that next to government, the hospitality industry is the largest single employer. So this matters. It matters to get this right. We've been in a great industry in terms of having a low bar of entry, but I think we've gone wanting in terms of really giving people an opportunity to improve their life and to have professional promotions. So what we found is this: when we first introduced this in 2015, we actually saw a pretty quick, steep, and troublesome rise in turnover. And I was not happy about that. Now, keep in mind, we went it alone. We were not part of a law. We were just making a choice to do this on our own. And there were certainly a number of veteran servers and bartenders who said, you know what, I didn't put in the last 6 years to get Friday and Saturday night shifts in order to see that I could have made just as much based on merit on a Monday or Tuesday night. I'm out of here. We probably lost about, 25% of our staff when we implemented this, because we were going it alone. And what's happened is that since 2015, our turnover rate has actually gone down quite dramatically, and it's now at a level which is well below the industry and well below where it was in 2014. So we feel really, really good about it. Why? Because the way that this all works is if your restaurant gets better. If you have less turnover, that means that more of your guests feel recognized by the front of the house staff as opposed to seeing someone new every time. It also means your food gets better because, quite frankly, cooks in the kitchen were leaving us before Hospitality Included to get a 50-cent raise somewhere else. Our cooks got a 20% raise the minute we implemented Hospitality Included. And so we're staying ahead, and we're also not finding the shortage of being able to attract people that we were before this program.
Danny Meyer, CEO of Union Square Hospitality Group, and his efforts to get rid of tipping at his restaurants, speaking with us from his Manhattan office. Now, various restaurants across the country are experimenting with the Hospitality Included model. Some have tried it and returned to the usual tip not included. Still to come, back to Florida and the changing business of eating out.
The footprint of a restaurant is getting smaller. Folks are wanting a more intimate dining experience.
This is the Sunshine Economy on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening. We've been talking about tips and the restaurant industry this hour. It's a time-honored practice of commerce in the restaurant business, which is doing pretty well in Florida. The number of jobs in restaurant and bars has grown at twice the rate compared to the overall job market in Florida over the past year. More Floridians work in these jobs than work for local governments.
It's always sort of bizarre to me. The fine dining inn is doing well. The quick serves, although the competition is unbelievably fierce, is doing very well.
Richard Turner heads up government relations for the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association.
Those that are in the middle are having some struggle trying to find their place. And a lot of it's societal changes, the way, you know, the public does stuff now, or they're attracted to certain types of restaurants. As an example, the footprint of a restaurant is getting smaller. Folks are wanting a more intimate dining experience than they've had in the past. A lot of it is they like local owned and run restaurants as opposed to huge mega chains. So everyone's having to make adjustments. It's a tough life. It's a very competitive life, but it's also a very rewarding one.
It's not a guaranteed pay. That's the only downside to serving, because one day you may make 50, the next you can make 300. There's really no anticipation of what to really expect.
Finn Davidson waits tables at a steakhouse in Brickell.
You can kind of hope for your average in the week, but to go ahead and say like, oh, I for sure know I'm going to go ahead and walk with $8 an hour, there's no way to say that, you know?
The ups and downs of pay is something we heard from the servers we spoke with. It's a byproduct of working for tips. Mauricio Aristides has gotten used to the ups and downs during his 12 years of waiting tables in South Florida.
You don't have a control how much you want to make a week. So because of that, you need to think in ahead. If I have a good week now, the odds will be the next week will not be that good. So you need to think about that. A lot of people, they're really optimists and think because they do a good money this week, next week will be better. I wish it was like that, but reality is they don't work like that. Normally, it's really balanced. You have a good week, bad week. Sometimes you will have 2 weeks that you will don't make what normally you do, but then you will have another three that will compensate for that.
College student Caitlin Svodbik tends to work weekend nights, so she says she doesn't see the ups and downs in her tips each week, that is, until the traditional slow months in the late summer and early fall here in South Florida.
End of September through the beginning of November, yeah. When we get to Thanksgiving, that's when things start to pick up again. But that, for me, is always a very hard transitional period because school is very demanding. And so the little nights that I am able to work, I have these high hopes that I'm going to be able to meet a certain goal. and it's usually maybe half of that. And I it's a recurring theme, but I try to shake it every time. So I definitely do. I would say that it's more seasonal than it is shift to shift.
But will restaurants need as many people serving in the future as they do now? It's part of the changing landscape, as the restaurant business is not immune to technology automation, says Richard Turner of the Florida Restaurant and Lodging Association.
It's not so much wages that the industry is looking at. It's technology. As we progress, if you've noticed, especially in a lot of quick serves and stuff, there's a lot of carousels that you can order. There's going to be, in our future, less and less people involved. And the reason is that, you know, one, automation and technology is going to take hold. And it's going to have a huge impact on our business.
For restaurant owner Jason Emmett, who runs the Duffy's Sports Grill chain, he's not so much focused on automation as he is focused on his company's future in Florida.
We're growing, right? And so as we grow, our plan is to grow throughout the state of Florida before we ever think about leaving the state, right? That's the common question I get is, when are you leaving the state of Florida? And for me, we have so many great opportunities within the state. There is an evolving landscape in the restaurant business. Delivery is becoming a real thing. People eating at home, different types of options, lots of competition, but that's always been the case. But I think there's just a lot of new alternatives and ways people are consuming and changing customer behaviors that just, you know, force us to sort of stay on our toes and adapt.
And one of those changes that Emmett will not be changing is Duffy's pay strategy, paying its front-of-the-house workers like servers the lower state minimum wage, counting on customers to tip for the service, and pooling some of that money to share with bartenders and bussers.
We've been through some of these cycles before, you know, and I've seen sort of a different version of this movie before where, you know, when unemployment is low, which is a great thing, right? I mean, that's a good thing. It provides challenges and it's just, it shapes the way we address the labor market. It makes it more challenging for us, but I also think it's a good thing, right? It keeps us on our toes. It's a little bit easier to recruit and hire people when unemployment is higher.
Jason Emmett speaking with us from a corner table on a patio of one of the Duffy Sports Grills that he owns and runs in South Florida. Don't forget, you can follow us on social media. Look for us on Twitter, at WLRN is our handle. And look for a podcast of this program by searching Sunshine Economy on iTunes. You can find this program, as well as all of our programs, on the podcast app. We had help this week from Leslie Ovalle. Michael Stock is our technical director. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening and supporting WLRN.